are they for? Why do we create holidays in our societies? How did they come to be, and why did we make them? I started thinking about this week, as this weekend, of course, is a holiday weekend. Now, I know sometimes for retired folks, when I say it's holiday weekend, I know one in particular, it's holiday weekend, right? And this weekend is one of those holiday weekends, which to me always feels like kind of the unofficial end of summer and the beginning of fall. Even though the weather this weekend is like 29, 30 degrees, it still feels like summer. But holidays did begin for a reason. They weren't just days paid off to sleep in, to go skiing or camping, to catch up on your errands or spend time with your family or whatever, although they have become mostly that for people. Well, we can do in this country what we want with our holidays. There's no requirement that you go and do something specific for a particular holiday. They did start for a reason. I just wanted to give a quick little primer on Canadian and Albertan holidays, some of which are particularly significant because they're Christian holidays. Did you know that there is no statutory holiday in Canada that is related to any other religion than Christianity? Right, when you think about it? No other holiday in Canada. That tells us something right away about our country and its history, doesn't it? Canada has 6 federal statutory holidays. Do you know what they are? What? Christmas? New Year's? No? Good Friday? Sorry? July 1st? Sorry, I'm hearing. Thanksgiving, no. Victoria Day, yes. Labor Day. And what did you just say? Yep, just got added in 2021 is the National Day for Truth and Reconciliation. That's our 6. Okay? In addition, federally regulated employees also get Easter Monday. Remembrance Day. Sorry? Boxing Day. Yep, Boxing Day. Boxing Day is not a holiday for everybody, right? Yeah. That's a provincial. So those are federal, sort of federal holidays if people get them. Alberta, along with 4 other provinces, have a holiday called Family Day. So 5 provinces have a Family Day, not every province. And it's the 3rd Monday of February, always. We also have a civic holiday the 1st Monday of August, a Heritage Day, along with 5 other provinces. Thanksgiving is not a federal holiday. It's the 2nd Monday of October, except for in the eastern provinces where they don't have Thanksgiving. Well, I guess they do. But, Nova Scotia, New Brunswick, PEI, Newfoundland don't have Thanksgiving Monday. And Remembrance Day on November 11th is nationwide, except for Ontario, Quebec, Nova Scotia, and Newfoundland. No wonder we get all confused about holidays. Every province and everybody across the country celebrates different ones. And not every place in the country has the same holidays, nor does every place in the world have the same holidays. So it's very confusing. But all across the country, we do acknowledge Labor Day. Today, so I wanted to explore a little bit this particular holiday because actually our faith tradition and the Bible have a lot to say about labor or work. It's obviously important. Labor Day has its roots in an 1872 printers' strike in Toronto. That's where it started. They were fighting for a 9-hour work day. Prior to that, they were working 12-hour days. 6 to 7 days a week. So they're fighting for a 9-hour work day. And this was, when they got it, a major victory in the changing relations between Canadian workers and the government, plus all other organizations. We are in the day when there is news almost all of the time of labor strife going on, dominated between disputes between workers and corporations. Most particularly right now, what? Railways, two railways, and airlines. All of our transportation hubs are being affected, right, by these this strife. And history provides a useful perspective on a period when working people had to fight to work for less than 12 hours a day. Imagine that. 6 or 7 days a week, they worked for 12 hours. So it was called the nine-hour movement at the time. And it began in Hamilton, Ontario, and then it spread to Toronto, where its demands were taken up by the Toronto Typographical Union, those who were creating papers, newspapers. So in 1869, the union at the time for these workers sent a petition to its members' employers requesting a weekly reduction in hours per week to 58. They asked for a weekly reduction in hours to 58 hours a week, placing itself actually as one of the leading advocates in the industrialized world for a shorter work week. Guess what happened? Corporations, the owners of businesses, outright denied them. And it was most vehemently denied by George Brown, who at that time owned the Globe in Toronto. So by 1872, this is 1869, by 1872, the union said they had had enough, and they went from asking for a shorter work week and demanded it. And they went, and then they threatened to strike. That's what started this in Canada. The employers, on the other hand, called the demand for a shorter work week foolish, absurd, and unreasonable. As a result, on the 25th of March in 1872, the printers went on strike. 1872. On April 15th, 1872, a demonstration was held to show solidarity among the workers of Toronto. And a parade of some 2,000 workers took to the streets of Toronto and marched through the city with their marching bands, the first workers' strike. By the time the parade reached Queen's Park, which is where the Parliament is, the sympathetic crowd for the workers had grown to 10,000 people. It's pretty big in 1872 for this city, right? Employers, on the other hand, fought the strike by bringing, sounds just like today, by bringing in replacement workers from small towns outside of Toronto. And George Brown launched a counterattack on the striking workers by launching a legal action against the union for conspiracy. Brown's action actually revealed this astonishing fact that it was, in fact, illegal to go on strike. And so they were either sent back to work, and the 24 members of the strike committee were jailed for doing this. However, the workers had an advocate in somebody who hated George Brown. It was John A. Macdonald. Now, a little shade has been thrown on him over the last years, but John A. Macdonald didn't like George Brown, so he's going to help the workers, right? And he's watching all of this very curious, with great interest. So he promised the workers that he would wipe out this barbarous law that didn't allow them to go on strike. And so he did that and came to the rescue of the imprisoned men and got them out of jail. And on the 14th of June, passed the Trade Unions Act. That's how long it's been going on. 130 years. 1792. 230 years. And it legalized and protected union activity. Macdonald not only embarrassed Brown, but he also earned the enduring support of the working class people, John A. Macdonald. However, that was not good for the workers in the short term, because many of them lost their jobs and in fact were forced to leave Toronto because of their actions. The long-term effects, though, were very positive. After 1872, almost all union demands included a 9-hour work week and a 54-hour week. We're down to 40 now, but it was a 54-hour. It was 7 days a week, but it was still a 9-hour work week, work day. Meanwhile, there were other campaigns for an 8-hour day that were already gaining popularity and would eventually take hold, especially in the United States. And the workers had a second lasting legacy. The parades held in support of the 9-hour movement and the printer strike led to an annual celebration of workers. In 1882, American labor leader Peter J. McGuire witnessed one of the labor festivals in Toronto, and he went back to New York and established a Labor Day in the States. But Labor Day started in Canada and went around the world. And then throughout the 1880s, pressure built in Canada to declare a national labor holiday. And so on the 23rd of July, 1894, 130 years ago, the government of Prime Minister John Thompson declared a Labor Day in Canada. That's the history of Labor Day. A parade took place in Winnipeg that year that was 5 kilometers long. And the tradition of Labor Day quickly spread not only throughout North America, but throughout the world. That is our history of Labor Day in Canada, which made a distinct impression on the industrialized world. It's important because labor undoubtedly is probably the most important thing to the functioning of any society. If everybody refused to work, we would not function. But if we go back to our own faith tradition and to the Bible, we get a better sense of why we work and what its importance is. And when I say work, I'm not talking about paid labor. People who volunteer at places are working. People who work in the home are working. People who go out and support families in other ways or do the work of manual labor to clean up our earth, those kinds of things. It's all work. We work in our homes. We volunteer in our communities. It's just doing something. And in fact, we as human beings work until the day our bodies no longer can work. We're always working no matter what. What are we working for? Well, first and foremost, Scripture says right from the beginning, is our responsibility as creatures of and from the earth to tend to the land, to care for the earth. That is our first responsibility. Everything. Have you thought about it? Everything we are sitting on, the buildings we build, the clothes we wear, the food we eat, everything we have as human beings comes from the earth. Every single thing. If it's not well tended to and cared for, we will have nothing and we will be in very bad shape, which is coming if we don't start looking after our earth. Genesis 2:15 says this: after God had created everything, including earth creatures or humans, says God took the earth creature and settled it in the Garden of Eden so that it might cultivate and care for the land. First purpose we find in Scripture is caring for the land. It's about tending to life. Work is about life. It's not about making a living. Work is about life. Not making money or growing possessions. Work is life, and it must be life-giving. Our work has to be about looking after that which provides for us. It's the primary reason we work. And it seems to me that we're getting further and further away from this purpose of tending to and caring for the earth. When we do this, we become more and more disillusioned with our work, and we have reduced our work lives to something we do to support our lives outside of work. That's not the reason for work. Our work itself should be life-giving to us and to the earth and to others. if we are working to support a lifestyle that we enjoy and our work is not enjoyable, do you know how many years we spend in work? It should be enjoyable. And more work is not becoming enjoyable for a lot of people. And if that is the case, then we're not doing the right thing by our work. It's moving further and further away from life-giving. And if you move further and further away from life-giving work, then all you're working for is to get something out of it that can help you with the rest of your life. That's not going to work for us. We have lost sight of that purpose of our work, which has allowed us, in fact, to exploit workers and to exploit the land. Work should give life. That's its purpose. Secondly, we work to provide for and tend to the lives of those closest to us. 1 Timothy says that people who don't provide for their relatives, especially those in the immediate household, have denied the faith and are worse than unbelievers. Ooh, strong words. Worse than unbelievers if you don't look after your family, those closest to you. We have, the Bible tells us, a responsibility to our family. And it might seem like the most evident of reasons why we work. We do it so that our families can thrive. Yet, I think even this also has become twisted in our culture. What's happening today is that the very thing we do to support our families, the work we do to support our families, takes so much time and energy away from our families that families are suffering in our effort to amass wealth and possessions, or on the other end of the spectrum, to just survive. Not finding that balance that provides adequately for what we need, but also allows us to create healthy families and be with and support families. That's a second purpose for work, to bring life to our families. Thirdly, our scripture tells us to contribute something worthwhile to society. We have a responsibility to our communities. Galatians says, "But if you think you are important when you are not, you are just deceiving yourself. Examine your own work. Each of you," he says, "if you find something to boast about, at least it's something of your own. When you examine your own life, at least it's something of your own that you're doing and not just empty comparison with your neighbor." Your work is not to be comparing yourself with others. It's to find something worthy to do. The writer says, carry your own load. Be responsible for your own work. No one is to place unnecessary pressure on societal systems to support them. If we can work, we are to work, either for pay or to support our community and families. And all of these, whether it's volunteer or work for pay, are necessary to a functioning society. We need good parents to be at home looking after their families. We need good volunteers, and we need paid employees to make this world run, to make our communities healthy. And each of us is responsible for creating a good and wholesome society. We're not to leave it to others, Scripture says. This we have also skewed a bit in our society when we're not providing meaningful work for all people. Meaningful work that gives people a sense of purpose and pride in what they're doing. And we are not compensating adequately for the work that a lot of people do. No one today, let alone a single parent or somebody who is trying to get through life in a decent Canada, it's just not affordable on minimum wage. And yet we force people to go out and work for minimum wage so that we can keep costs lower for those of us who have some wealth. We're not providing well for those who are scraping by. And so there is becoming an increasing gap between those who have resources and money and those who do not have. We have a responsibility to create meaningful work that is adequately paid, that allows all people to contribute to the communal well-being of all in our societies. And finally, there are always going to be, and Jesus said this himself, there are always going to be people who are unable for various reasons to do much work, at least work that pays for their lifestyles, which is the fourth reason that we work. In Ephesians, the writer says to the community, I don't know what they've gotten up to, but this is what he says. You who are stealing, stop it. Stop stealing, he says. Go to work. Do something useful with your hands so that you have something to share with the needy. They got told off. Whatever people were doing, they were somehow stealing from others and not living up to the responsibilities for caring for others. They are taking from others and not contributing. So the author chastises them and tells them, just get out there and be useful. Come on, do something so that you have something that you can share with people who are in need. We know that there are people in need for a host of reasons, and Jesus said that the poor, the needy will always be among us. That there will be people out there who have need is a given. The next part of that, though, is those who are able to do something about it are called to do something for the needy. It's one of the reasons we work, to help others. And then ultimately in Proverbs, the writer says, commit everything you do to God and your plans will succeed. Commit everything you do to God and your plans will succeed. If we deliberately commit all of our work to the best version of the world we can imagine, we will see the fruit of our work and it will be good. It's when we don't have purposeful work, meaningful work, we're not tending to the earth, we're not caring for others, that we see a decline in our societies. If we commit what we're doing and it is honoring to uphold the goodness of creation and each other, then families and communities and the earth are going to thrive under that. What are we working for? What are we working for? It's not wealth. It's not status or power. It's not to look good or to compare ourselves to others. Any honorable work is worthwhile. We work to tend to the earth, to tend to each other, and to find a sense of worth and purpose in our lives. So maybe this Labor Day, we could take a few moments to ponder this. What are we working for? What is important enough for us to work toward? Is our work bringing us more in alignment with what work is meant to offer to us and the world? Because really our work is partnering with God to make this earth a beautiful and livable place for everyone who lives there. Is this what I'm working for? Is this what you're working for? Let's just take a moment to ponder that.